It's Champions League football once again for FC Salzburg, and on this preview podcast, we'll be looking into their chances of getting past Benfica, Inter and Real Sociedad in UEFA's Premier Club competition. Welcome to this Champions League Group D preview podcast. Another trip to San Siro awaits for Salzburg after their 4-0 defeat at the hands of Milan last year. This time it's Inter in the groups for them, Benfica in Lisbon and La Real in San Sebastian as well. A really classy group of Champions League opponents for FC Salzburg. My name's Tom Midler. I'm here with Lee Wingate and Simon Clark. And I'll come to you, Simon, first. What are your initial thoughts on Salzburg's opponents in that Champions League group?
Well, my initial thoughts are that it's quite a tough group, actually. On paper, maybe it doesn't include like a true heavyweight, I guess. But then again, you have Inter, who were Champions League semi-finalists last season. You have Real Sociedad, who you know are a very, very good team, who topped Europa League group in the season before with Manchester United in their group and beat Manchester United. And of course, Benfica, who are like always there and thereabouts in the latter stages of European tournaments. I think it's a really difficult group, actually, for Salzburg. And I'm not overly confident they'll even get a spot in the Europa League, really. I think it's underratedly a difficult group.
Yeah, perhaps not just full of big names, but nonetheless, very, very tough. Do you think internally the club will be fully aiming for the top two, or do you think they themselves would be happy with P3? I know I would be pretty happy if they got third and dropped down, but what do you think the club themselves are thinking when they look at that?
I think what the club's thinking is to try and qualify from the group. I think if you're going into a group thinking, oh, let's try and get third, that's not the right mentality to have. They've done it before. They've qualified for the knockout stages of the Champions League, and unfortunately they came up against a very good opponent and got hammered. However, we also see that when they get in third place and they drop down into the Europa League, they also generally play very, very difficult opponents there. So honestly, if I was the management team of Salzburg, I'd be looking to try and qualify from the group. I think there's potential, but it is a very difficult group, with three opponents who could all beat Salzburg.
Yeah, if you're good enough to finish P3, you're probably just about good enough to finish P2. And like you say, it's not like finishing P3 is a guarantee of a long run in the next competition anyway, because those draws tend to be very, very tough.
The funny thing is that, so the last time Salzburg went on a really far run in Europe was in 2018 when they got to the Europa League semi-finals. In that season, who did they play in the round of 32? Well, they played against Real Sociedad and they beat them on aggregate. So that's a good omen, I guess. But also an omen against is they're playing Inter, who in the previous reincarnation of Salzburg, when they were Casino Salzburg, they played Inter in the 1994 UEFA Cup final and lost that final. But they actually played quite recently in a friendly at the Red Bull Arena, where Inter won 4-3. In a very entertaining game. And it's their first ever meeting against Benfica, which is quite a surprising thing for me. And it's actually Benfica's first trip to Austria since 2006, when they eliminated Austria Wien from Champions League qualifying. So yeah, it is a very difficult group for Salzburg. However, there's a good omen in there with Sociedad, and maybe a not so good omen playing Inter again.
And that's a really nice overview of what Salzburg are going to be up against, and yeah, maybe some of the pointers from their games against Benfica, Sociedad and Inter. Lee, coming to you, what do you think of Salzburg's chances in that group? We've just said, you know, we think they might struggle, they could lose to any of those opponents, but who do you think could be Salzburg's key players in this group stage, and what might be perhaps some of their strengths and weaknesses on the Champions League stage?
Well, I think, like Si said, it's a difficult group. There are teams there that, you know, have gone very far in recent seasons, last year's finalist Inter being one example. Salzburg, I think, have just done what they always manage to do and bring through another crop of excellent young players who seem to be slotting in seamlessly together. And I think in previous years, we've doubted whether the generation that followed the likes of Haaland and Daka could compete in Europe. And I think they showed that a lot of them could. The likes of Sesko, Saivalt performed very well, Noah Okafor as well. I trust that this current crop of players will be able to do exactly that. I think the likes of Karim Konate, Roko Simic, they've got some exciting young players there. They've got Alexander Schlager between the sticks. I genuinely believe that this group will fare no worse than any previous generation.
As you say, talent's all over, really. Defence, midfield, up front. They've got the relatively experienced Schlager at 26 years of age in goal, which is very old by Salzburg terms. You feel like they've got goals from all over at the moment. Maybe it's going to be another one of those seasons where it's not just, for example, Karim Konate who's going to bang in loads of goals. I have a feeling that they're going to have lots of players scoring regularly. So it's kind of open as to who is going to be the hero for Salzburg, if there is indeed to be one in the Champions League group stages. I wonder if somebody from the attacking midfield position, somebody like Dion Kameri, somebody like that could perhaps make an impact. Amar Dedic has been really good in the Bundesliga this season, could see him as a fullback having a big impact in the Champions League. It's so exciting for that young set of players, Kjærgaard as well, because they've all got this chance. They've all got this chance to seize in the Champions League and to make a name for themselves on the international, you know, on the European stage. And I think that is where Salzburg excel. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing who takes that chance.
Me too. I think the one thing I would like to see this season to improve on previous Salzburg European campaigns is that if they do manage to finish third and get into the Europa League, which I think is a realistic possibility there, because I think you would probably, most pundits would have Salzburg as finishing third in that group, probably ahead of Real Sociedad. I would like to see them not fail at the first hurdle. And I know this is a long way down the line. We haven't even got to the group stage yet. Those games haven't even taken place. But I do feel that Salzburg have let themselves down a little bit in recent years by finishing third mostly and then failing at the very first hurdle in the Europa League. So I reckon they can finish third. I don't know if you guys see it as going the same way.
I think it's possible, isn't it? As we said at the start, it's possible, but it's by no means a guarantee. We've had some groups where you think, okay, Salzburg should definitely be able to do enough to get third here. Whereas I think, yeah, fourth would obviously be a disappointment, but it wouldn't be a kind of collapse if they were to finish fourth in a group this strong.
Yeah, I think obviously they're going to target qualification, but I think the most likely position is third, but I can't tell you which team is going to be in fourth.
After a quick break, we'll hand over to interviews with experts from each of the teams that Salzburg are going to be up against to give us a better look at their chances in this Champions League group. Welcome back to part two of this podcast, where we look at Salzburg's UEFA Champions League group stage opponents. We'll go over to the interview section. Let's hear now from Aaron of Proxima Jornada. Aaron, thanks a lot for joining us on the podcast today. It's really nice to have you with us to talk about the Portuguese teams. In this case, we'll talk about Benfica because they are in the Champions League group alongside Salzburg. So to get things kicked off, can you tell us a little bit about your Portuguese football coverage, and then we'll dive into Benfica themselves?
Yeah, first of all, it's a pleasure to be on here. It's a privilege. And Portuguese football has just been a passion of mine since I was very young, a very small child, watching football on the TV. And it was just something that sort of stuck with me. And then once I started writing about football, I was writing more specifically about Portuguese football, first for The Analyst at Opta, and also at Proxima Jornada, which is a website that I created about 4 or 5 years ago, just to try and give more coverage to Portuguese football in the English language. A lot of the stuff that I was reading was taken from newspapers and watching the panel shows, TV shows in Portuguese, but there wasn't a lot of English language content out there. There certainly is today in 2023, there's a bit more, but as I say, in 2018, 2019, there wasn't as much. And yeah, it's opened a lot of doors for me, but that passion, I think, has always been the driving force behind it. So I don't think that'll ever go away.
Yeah, that's great. Prossima Jornada, really worth recommending as well. And we know what it's like to cover a league in English. So, you know, when there's not too much English coverage. So it's really nice to have your expertise on this podcast as well. To come to Benfica, how was their season last year? I actually was lucky enough to see a bit of Benfica because I did a few commentaries on their games. But how did you think they went last year, and how did they end up exactly getting into the Champions League?
Yeah, so they had a fantastic season last season. I think it was a bit of a strange one because of the World Cup. So I think the break didn't help them, because before the break they were sort of firing on all cylinders. Not to say that it dismantled the season. It didn't at all. They won the Primeira Liga. They were, you know, really strong. But before the World Cup, they'd only dropped 2 points in the Primeira Liga. They were absolutely firing on all cylinders in the Champions League. They topped the group, the Champions League group, ahead of the likes of Paris Saint-Germain and Juventus. And then, yeah, it sort of, Enzo Fernandez goes to the World Cup with Argentina as a midfielder that had only been at the club for, you know, 6 months, and goes on to, I think he won Young Player of the Tournament, and eventually sort of moves on. And they have to sort of deal with that midway through the season, when really the president, Rui Costa, had spoken at the start of the season about how they wanted to give it a real good go in the Champions League and you know, sort of try and bring some of that European heritage and glory back to Benfica, known for a team who were obviously great in decades past, but in the Champions League in sort of recent years hadn't achieved too much. But I think they're making good progress. The last two seasons, they've made the quarterfinals on both occasions. So, yeah, they're now back in, and they'll be hoping to try and emulate that.
You mentioned Enzo Fernandez. Obviously, he had this great breakout season at Benfica, came through, did brilliantly, and then moved on. Mm-hmm. What is the squad looking like this season in general in terms of some of the star players from last season? Mm-hmm. Are most of them still there, and who did they bring in the off-season?
Yeah, so again, they've had quite a, I think personally, they've had a smart window. Some of the signings that they've made, really astute. I think they brought in Orkan Kocu, the central midfielder who was just nominated, well, just won a few days ago, the Eredivisie Player of the Season for last season. When he was at Feyenoord, he was Feyenoord's captain. So bringing him in when several of the sort of big clubs and clubs within the top five European leagues were definitely interested in him. I think he's 22, so got a really high ceiling. It's a really good move for him as well at this stage of his career. Some would say, you know, going from Holland to Portugal, it's sort of a little bit of the same in terms of what the clubs are expected to do in the Champions League. That, you know, the last time a team from outside the top five European leagues won the Champions League was 2004, which was Jose Mourinho's Porto. So it is difficult to try and achieve something like that, but it sets himself up, because if he goes on and smashes it at Benfica, which I think he will, you know, we've saw what's happened with players like that in the past. I mean, Enzo Fernandez was here in the blink of an eye, and before you know it, he's gone. And the sum of money, the you know, the profit that they made from him. And then the other signings, the likes of Angel Di Maria, is just, you know, it's a ridiculously good signing in terms of the profile. He's now, what, 35 years of age, but it's a club that he's played for before. It's like his first love on the European stage, and he's came back this sort of more refined player than he was when he left. Obviously, a lot more experience, and he will be key in these big games because he's been there and he's done it. And he's not just came back for a farewell tour either, like an encore. He's 4 goals and an assist in his 5 games since coming back on the international break. Most recently, he's just provided 2 assists in a 3-0 win against Bolivia. So he's still putting in shifts. He's still bringing that quality. He's a big game player. So I think that's a great signing. And then they signed Arthur Cabral from Fiorentina because they lost Gonçalo Ramos, sadly. But great for him. He's went to Paris Saint-Germain. They've lost a big source of goals in him, but Benfica have shown time after time they know how to replace players. The season before, Gonçalo Ramos really established himself as that number 9. It was Darwin Núñez who was the top scorer, sold him on to Liverpool, and they didn't miss him at all last season. You know, if anything, they improved from his departure, which is, you know, crazy to say, but they just continue to keep going as the Portuguese clubs do. And then, yeah, other big losses. Grimaldo, it looked for a couple of seasons that he was going to be heading out the door. He's went to Bayer Leverkusen. Sort of, no matter your opinion on him as a player, he's an output machine, goals and assists. He ranks really highly across the Premier League for the last sort of 5 years, four key passes into the opposition's box, crosses, assists, goals, you know, all that, set pieces. So he's a big miss, but yeah, I think they've bought well and then brought in Juan Bernat as well on loan, which we'll see how he does. I don't know how that one will play out. He could be, you know, a snip. I think he signed on a loan. I don't know if there's an option to buy, but yeah, that was one that happened quite late in the window.
Yeah, some really nice detail on the players that Benfica have brought in and some of the talents that they've lost as well. You mentioned Angel Di Maria. I was lucky enough to commentate actually on the Portuguese Super Cup at the very beginning of the season. And Di Maria, obviously coming back to Benfica, had a great game when Benfica won that Super Cup, lifted the first trophy of the season. So a good start there. But you talked earlier about their kind of European heritage and the glory days of Portuguese football. And also about last season's Champions League group. I remember them really putting in some impressive performances. Looking to this group stage, do you think they'll be able to continue some of that momentum? It felt like Portuguese football and Benfica in particular almost took a step forward in terms of what they were able to do on the European stage, seeing them dismantle Juventus, play so well against Paris Saint-Germain. Is that something that they'll be looking to repeat realistically this season and in the group that they're in? Will they fancy that top spot once again?
Yeah, I don't see why not, to be honest. I mean, it's a difficult group because obviously the group last season in terms of those sort of big names, they stick out. But I think this is a group this season that's got just four really competent sides in because obviously Salzburg, Inter, the team that, you know, knocked Benfica out last season. So they'll be out for a little bit of revenge there, and Portuguese football in general, because they knocked Porto out in the same campaign as well. And you know, in both of those games, really, I think Porto were a little bit hard done to not have got past them there. I think they hit the woodwork a couple of times, and Inter just knew how to hold on. And I think in both of the Benfica games, Benfica, I think, controlled possession. I think they had more chances, but yeah, Inter were just clinical. And then the other team is Real Sociedad as well. And again, back in the Champions League, you know, a side that can throw in a surprise. And, you know, the Spanish sides will be tactically, you know, disciplined, well-drilled, good on and off the ball, technical. So, yeah, I think for Benfica, it's about trying to go one further than last season, the season before, which is difficult because when you set the bar so high as to get to the quarterfinal, which, you know, people might listen and think, you know, well, it's not that high of a bar. But when, as we were speaking before, Portuguese football in general, when you're comparing sort of budgets and you're comparing the players to some of the sides that you come up against, I think the aim for Benfica is to obviously get out of the group stage and just fingers crossed that you can try and get a good side of, you know, a good path and try and get a good sort of route towards the final and just take it then a game as it comes. I think last season they played Club Brugge. So soon as that draw was done, you're thinking, right, definitely got enough to get over the two legs here. And then, you know, try and keep that momentum going. As I say, the World Cup did dismantle the rhythm a little bit. It when they came back, they I think the first defeat came after they came back from the World Cup in the league. And you just start dropping points, you start faltering, your squad's changed a little bit as a result. Obviously, they'll have to, you know, contend with the same issues in terms of the January transfer window. Always changes things. Your squad might look a little bit different going into that second half. But I do feel like they were a bit of a runaway train at that point, and it just came a little bit to a halt. And then they have to sort of restart. But again, no excuses. As did every other team. It just, yeah, felt like they were in a really good moment. So this season, yeah, try and get out the group, try and avoid one of the big boys. I mean, if you do end up getting drawn against, you know, Manchester City or Bayern Munich or Real Madrid, sometimes you've just got to be, you know, we'll try and do what we can. But yeah, I think the aim has got to be for a club like Benfica and all of the Portuguese clubs in Europe is just to keep improving and try and, yeah, I think you said before, it felt like they took a step forward. Can we try and take another step forward this season?
Yeah, it's a very talented side, an ambitious side, of course. It's going to be very difficult for Salzburg coming up against them. But last but not least here, what's it going to be like for the Salzburg fans travelling over to Portugal, to Lisbon? What's the stadium like? We've got a bit of experience of it ourselves, but what do you make of the match day atmosphere at Benfica? And what do their away fans travel like? I assume they travel in pretty large numbers.
Yeah, the you know, a very, very well supported club. You know, they've got millions of fans around the world. But yeah, the match day experience at home, I think will be brilliant for the Salzburg supporters. I think Lisbon is just, you know, an incredible city itself. It's got a great culture. It's got a great nightlife, and I can testify to that definitely. And and then the stadium's, you know, it's a brilliant stadium, but you know, it'll be a really good experience. I think I think Portuguese football at times can be a little bit not struggle, but sometimes, especially the midweek games, sometimes the attendances aren't, you know, the best. But with Benfica, you know, they're certainly one of the best at it in terms of putting bums in seats and having people in the stadium. You know, I think last season, I think they averaged probably around, say, 58,000 around then. So really good numbers. And obviously, the further that they get in the competition, the more hopeful the fans will be and getting people into the stadium. So yeah, I recommend Lisbon. I recommend, you know, visiting the stadium. And even if you're not a Salzburg supporter, I think, yeah, definitely get over to Portugal and experience a match day. Yeah, really good.
A city worth going to, a team worth visiting for sure. Yeah, as with many of these European ties, massively looking forward to Salzburg, Benfica and Benfica Salzburg. Aaron, thanks a lot for your expertise and your Benfica insight for this podcast. It's been brilliant to have you on. Cheers.
No problem. Thanks.
Next up, we spoke to Alvaro Romeo, who previewed Sociedad against Salzburg for us. It's great to have you on the podcast. Lovely to speak to you again after quite a few years since Salzburg played against Spanish opposition quite a while back. This time, they've got Sociedad in the group. Real Sociedad is a team I remember vaguely from some games against Austrian opposition in the past. But can you tell us about them right now? How was their season last year? How did they end up qualifying for this group? And how are they doing, basically?
Well, Real Sociedad is one of the finest projects in Spanish football, a very sensible one. They've been close to qualifying for the Champions League for a few years now. And last season, I believe that they took advantage of Sevilla's poor start of the season, all together with Betis' inconsistency and Villarreal's managerial changes put Real Sociedad in a privileged position to try to clinch the fourth spot, and they did it, having a very good defense, being very audacious when it came to game management, knowing how to deal with tight margins, 1-0, 0-0, these kind of situations. Real Sociedad got many points out of it. And they qualified fourth with a nice style of football, with a ground that normally gets full, like the Real Arena, and with a good bunch of players. Real Sociedad always had a good taste and a soft spot for technical footballers, and I believe that they still have many.
You mentioned, obviously, the style of play, the players, the stadium as well. All things I'll get to in the next few minutes. But let's start with the players. Who were the key components of the side that finished fourth last season, which is pretty impressive in La Liga? And did those players stay throughout the summer? Did they bring in anybody else in this transfer window as well?
Yeah, of course, there have been some coming and goings. I think that it's worth replying to your question from the beginning. Who were the good players this season? I think that the goalkeeper, Ramiro, was excellent. The defenders were solid, especially Robin Lenormand was so good that he earned himself a cap for Spain, and now he's a regular starter for the Spanish national side, despite having been born in France. Then in midfield, I think that Zubimendi, Mikel Merino, and David Silva were fundamental for Real Sociedad. And that up front, I believe that the good work of Kubo and Sorloth did a lot for Real Sociedad. Altogether with a midfielder that they got themselves from Celta, called Bryce Mendez, who is a very good scorer as well. I think that those players were the key of Real Sociedad last season. When it comes to the changes that we have seen this summer, of course, the most notorious one is the fact that David Silva retired from football. He was going to stay one more season, but he ruptured his ACL, I believe, in summer, his knee, and he decided to retire, which, in my opinion, brings a big problem for Real Sociedad because they relied a lot on the creativity of David Silva, especially between the line, in the tight spaces. But all that said, it doesn't mean that Real Sociedad doesn't have top midfielders with a decent creative, creative characteristic. One of them being Mikel Merino. He's one of the best Spanish midfielders. He scored for Spain the other day in the September international tournament. I think that Zubimendi, he's becoming one of the best holding midfielders in Spain. And when it comes to the new additions, well, Sorloth left to Villarreal, and Villarreal, Real Sociedad, got themselves a player like André Silva, good striker, who obviously hasn't played a lot this season yet because he came from Germany with an injury, but I think that that signing was very clever. And then I think that it's very interesting to follow the development of Umar Sadiq, a player at Real Sociedad signed last season in August. He broke his knee and this season he's back. If we add as well the very excellent Mikel Oyarzabal, who I believe that he's going to get better and better after recovering from an ACL issue, and the Russian Arsen Zakarian, a player that they just have signed, I would say that Real Sociedad has a stronger squad this season than last season, but on the other hand, they are missing a super player like David Silva, who was still playing very well for them. Ah, and of course, I wouldn't like to forget two players that they got themselves this summer. One, Odriozola, to play as a fullback in the right, and the other one, Kieran Tierney, on loan from Arsenal. Those two players are in Real Sociedad to improve the overall level. So I think that, generally speaking, this summer Real Sociedad has done a great job.
Yeah, really nice to hear about that in detail. Thanks for your knowledge. Thanks for sharing that with us on so many of the Sociedad players. It's really nice to hear the squad detail there. You mentioned the stadium before. You said it's often full. What's it like as one of the stadiums in La Liga? Is it a good place to go? What's the kind of pedigree like on European nights? Is it going to be a place that, that people enjoy traveling to in the next few months?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a great place to go. Climate change is, I think, a very trendy, very big trending topic right now. Fortunately, in the north of Spain, the temperatures in September are not too hot. So going to the Real Arena in September, October, even November will be a pleasure. I think that the climate will be okay. It can get rainy, but at the same time, the temperatures are between 15 to 21 degrees. So that's absolutely acceptable and very nice. And the atmosphere is great. I think that the Real Sociedad atmosphere, or the atmosphere at the Real Sociedad ground, is one of the most improved over the last 5 to 10 years. I think that the fans have made a joint effort to create a very good atmosphere. They want to replicate a little bit some of the iconography and movements and dances and chants that they have been done in some other grounds. It's very common to see the Real Sociedad supporters just turning their back to the pitch and just jumping when they score a goal on, or when things are going well during the game too. And, you know, I think that they've got a really good crowd over there. The noise is excellent at the Real Arena, and it's also a very modern ground in a very beautiful city. So, yeah, I strongly recommend to go to San Sebastián.
Yeah, sounds very nice. Like a club on the up as well, both on and off the field, perhaps. Where do you see their European pedigree playing a part this season? What kind of expectations do you think they'll have going into this European group stage? And do you think they'll fancy themselves to make a good run in this competition?
I think that They are optimistic about the Champions League. They are very happy to be there because they haven't been there in 10 years. I believe that the expectations are not particularly over the top. So there is an understanding that being in a group with Salzburg, Benfica and Inter is going to be difficult. I think that this group is probably the second best of the tournament after the one with Milan, Newcastle, PSG and so on. But the club in general is enjoying a very positive moment, a good era. So I think that if they could qualify for the next round of the Champions League, they will be super happy with it. If they don't, it couldn't be a massive drama because the club has a structure, has a solid foundation right now. Even the manager, Imanol, he is very, very much liked by the supporters. So I think that if Real Sociedad, for example, wouldn't qualify second and would qualify third or fourth, you know, the fans wouldn't be really, really, really disappointed. But on the other hand, if Real Sociedad couldn't put a proper fight in the Champions League and they would come out with 0 points, of course, there would be a sense of, well, this level is still too much for us. So my answer would be that.
So maybe a little bit of pressure off Real Sociedad ahead of this group stage. Alvaro, thank you so much for telling us about them. It's really nice to get your perspective on Salzburg's ties against Sociedad. A little bit of an idea for us and for our listeners as to what Salzburg will be up against when they take on Real Sociedad in the Champions League. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure to have you. Cheers.
It's been a pleasure for me. Thank you very much.
Nima of the Italian Football Podcast helped us to look at Inter against Salzburg. Nima, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast today to help us preview Inter. It's one of the ties that I'm most excited about, actually, and I'm sure it's one of the ties that a lot of our listeners are really excited about in this group, Inter, Benfica, Sociedad and Salzburg. First and foremost, can you just tell us a bit about how Inter ended up in this Champions League group stage? Of course, they had quite a decent season last year, it seemed like it, but how was it from the Italian perspective?
Well, it was a very schizophrenic season for Inter. I mean, it reminded me a lot about how the 93-94 season, when Inter almost were relegated but still ended up winning the UEFA Cup, it was a strange season. I mean, they went to the final of the Champions League only for the sixth time in their history. Lost 12 games in the Serie A, finished third. They were never in the title race, which is a huge disappointment, but they retained both of their domestic cup titles in the Supercoppa Italiana and the Coppa Italia. So it was a very, very weird season. It never really got going until April when they went on that run and secured top four, because that was in jeopardy. So that's how they, you know, and also, of course, reaching the Champions League final, was huge for the team. I mean, for the club and the team. I was there at the return leg at the San Siro for the return leg against Milan, the Euro Derby, as they call it. And it was truly remarkable. I mean, it was the third Euro Derby in my lifetime, and this was just other level of intensity in terms of just the build up to the game. Usually derbies in the city, or with, you know, with this, it's a Serie A or Coppa Italia, they're usually very, you know, there's a lot of boasting going around, and there's a lot of, you know, fans tend to like want to meet up and sing and do that. But there was none of that this time. There was two people were too nervous. It was too tense. You could feel it in the air. It was unlike anything else. I mean, I've had the great privilege to not just visit and not just watch the Milan derby, but also cover it as a member of the press. And this was like my ninth, tenth derby. And I've not seen anything like this. It was truly, truly unique. And of course, afterwards, when Lautaro scores that goal and secures Inter's spot, it was just unbelievable. And you could, you know, they started talking then about how last year in September, they were talking about, you know, we want to reach the Champions League final. You know, that's our dream. And they managed to do that. Which was truly, truly remarkable. And they were unlucky not to win the final, if we're perfectly honest. I think they were tactically outstanding against Guardiola, who looked frustrated and admittedly afterwards that he did adapt to how Inter played so as to be able to win the game.
It could have gone differently, couldn't it? Salzburg fans got the pleasure, I suppose, of being able to go to San Siro to watch the game against Milan last year. I was there for that. really so fortunate to be able to go to what I call one of my very, very favorite stadiums. I've made no secret of the fact that I think that was about the best atmosphere that I've experienced. And that wasn't even a derby. So can Salzburg fans, maybe the ones who went to San Siro last year, will be the same kind of fans who will go this year to see them against Inter? Is there any difference in the stadium, in the Giuseppe Meazza, when Inter play in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, look, both of these sets of fans are unbelievable. The noise level is unlike anything. The acoustics are just, it's nothing, there's nothing like it. So they will, you know, Inter fans have, you know, of course they want to boast and say we're better than Milan fans. But yeah, I mean, both sets of fans support for their home teams in Champions League games. Is truly unbelievable. It's unlike anything else, and they will probably have to, they should expect exactly what they saw against Milan, if not even a little bit more high, you know, in terms of how loud it is, a little bit louder even, because it's there's been songs written in Italian about the lights at the San Siro in the night game and stuff like that, and it is truly a remarkable experience. If you have the possibility and opportunity to go, you really should take it.
Yeah, I would urge anybody to get down to Milan. It's not too far from Austria either, so it is doable. And of course, you can just fly. You can travel from anywhere for a game like that, and it will be worth it. Inter obviously had this really great European run last season. You mentioned that domestically, although they had some trophies as well, it was a bit of a strange season. How was their summer in terms of gaining players, buying new players, and maybe in terms of outgoing players, players who they lost who were part of that run last season?
It was the revolution that Inter fans have been waiting for a long time. A much needed rejuvenation, a much needed revolution, building towards something new. I mean, this was Simone Inzaghi's third summer, but it was the first summer in which he actually got what he wanted. The only player he didn't get was Romelu Lukaku. And personally, I was against Inter spending that much money on Lukaku to begin with, because I don't think he's worth 40 million euros plus his wages, given his age and also where he is in his career physically. I mean, I've said for a couple of seasons now that I don't think Romelu Lukaku will ever become the player he once was under Antonio Conte. And I think he peaked there. His biggest mistake was to leave Inter in that summer and go to Thomas Tuchel in at Chelsea, and you know, we all know what happened there. So I don't think it was worth it. The big money signing, which is also the most expensive signing that any club did in the Serie A this summer, which says a lot about the finances of the Serie A, was Benjamin Pavard. And Pavard is fundamental to how Inter play, even though he's not made his debut. And what I mean by that is, tactically, Benjamin Pavard, if you look at how he plays and how the characteristics he has, and you see him to the right of a back three in a Simone Inzaghi system with Alessandro Bastoni on the left, he is, on paper, the perfect player for that system. He was my number one choice. I mean, I'd say he even suits that system better than Milan Skriniar, who under Antonio Conte learnt to play to the right of a back three. But I mean, of course, if it were possible to keep Skriniar, you'd want him in the middle, and you'd put Pavard and Bastoni on either side of him, and that would be an unbelievable defense. That would be the ideal Simone Inzaghi defense. Maybe if Bremer had gone to Inter, that would have been slightly better because of, you know, the characteristics he has, how quick he is, and the physical presence that he has. But regardless, I think Pavard was the most important signing they made, and it was the most necessary signing. As for Brozovic leaving, I mean, Marcelo Brozovic is one of the best in the world in his position, but he's not getting any younger. He costs a lot in terms of wages. And given that Inter were in the, you know, UEFA's settlement agreement with UEFA, they had to make money in order to spend money. And given that Brozovic had joined Inter so many years ago, his value has been completely amortized. So it's pretty much just all of it was a capital gains. And the same was, of course, of Andre Onana. So I don't think Inter were weakened at all. I'd say that in terms of Marcus Thuram coming in, Alexis Sanchez returning, Davide Fratesi coming in, Cuadrado coming in as a backup, Gosens out, Carlos Augusto in, Pavard, of course, coming in, Jan Bisek is a great unknown. I'd say Inter improved in every single position because they also have changed how they play. The only notable weakness, of course, is in goal, even though I think Jan Sommer is good. Andre Onana was just better for the for Simone Inzaghi system. Andre Onana, his ability when, you know, with the ball at his feet, that was the reason Pep Guardiola didn't press Inter in the final. He said it himself. He's like, when, you know, with Onana, Inter play a 4-5-2 because he becomes the left of the right centre back, the middle centre back becomes the left centre back, the right and left centre back become full backs, the wing backs become wingers. And you have Brozovic in between linking up as well. I mean, his ball playing ability is unbelievable on Onana. There were things he did last season which were just mind blowing. It's not just the fact that he's incredibly technical goalkeeper. It's also his ability that he knows almost like in a kind of Pirlo-esque kind of way, knows when to pass the ball, how to pass it, whether it's not just these long balls. I saw him, I think it was against Atalanta or Torino, where Inter scored a goal, and that was all due to the guy, Andre Onana's pass through the middle of the pitch from goal, one time, perfectly executed, like a hot knife through butter in the middle, playing off of Lautaro and Lukaku and then going off on goal. It's the kind of passes that you've only ever seen these elegant registas do. He's truly unbelievable at that. And Inter have lost that because Jan Sommer is not anywhere near as good, even though he is good with the ball at his feet. He isn't anywhere near as good as Onana is. So I'd say that's the only notable weakness. I think the system that Inter are playing this season is a much more deeper system. I mean, it's a system where the balance is a little bit deeper. They're much more direct, a bit more counter-attacking, and much more dynamic, and attack spaces more. And of course, Lautaro now being the focal point, not just the captain, but on the pitch, on and off the pitch, the focal point of Inter. He is the symbol of this Inter. And he's improved incredibly, both as the link-up player and as a penalty box player already. We're seeing that improvement. So it's an Inter Simone Inzaghi is not a man of big words, but he's made it absolutely clear they want to win the Serie A and that they want to win every trophy they're in, every tournament they're participating in.
My next question would have been about ambitions. There's some great detail on the players that they've gained and lost there. Where do you think Inter see themselves then in this group alongside Benfica, Sociedad, Salzburg? I think there's no hesitation in saying that they'll be gunning for the top spot, but do you think it's realistic that they can repeat their run to the final this season as well?
No, I don't think it's realistic for any Italian team to gun for winning the Champions League or reaching the final, given the financial disparities that exist between Italian clubs and, above all, Premier League clubs, but also the oil clubs, the state clubs, and of course, and you know, as well as Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, who operate, especially Bayern Munich, who operate on a level that is such a well-run club. The 51% rule obviously in Germany still exists, but they are my favorites to win it. I think Bayern are just head and shoulders above everyone else. I think they did exactly what they needed to do. I think Harry Kane and Kim Min-jae are perfect signings for them. So, I don't think Inter will reach the final again. I think Inter will, I mean, they have to gun for to win their Champions League group. That's something they've not done in a very, very long time. I think that is what Inter are gunning for, and that is what should be realistic. I mean, with all due respect to the other teams in the group, I do think Inter have a quality and depth that no one else in this group has. And as such, I think it would be unrealistic and it would be disingenuous of me to sit here and say that, no, they, you know, just want to finish top two. No, Inter have to win this group. It's as simple as that. If they don't, I'd say it's not a failure, but it's not exactly a great success either.
Nima, thank you so much for your insight on Inter. That's really exciting stuff. I'm really looking forward to the games to come along now and perhaps another chance to get to San Siro.
Well, I hope you do. And thanks for the invite. Happy to be with you anytime.
The There we go then. A massive thank you to all of our contributors for this European podcast. It has been a real pleasure interviewing you all and talking about Salzburg's chances against Benfica, Sociedad and Inter Milan. Before we sign off and look forward to the group games, a couple of questions. Simon and Lee, what do you think? I'll start with you, Simon. What do you think is the crunch game of these groups for Salzburg? Which one is going to be the most decisive of the six potentially?
That's a hard question, because I can see Inter dropping points against Benfica and Sociedad. So maybe it's those games against Inter, because frankly, if you're Salzburg, you're looking at those games against Inter thinking, you know, there's a chance, but not really. Whereas the games against Benfica and Sociedad, those are the ones where you really feel like you have a chance. So actually, I think it might be the teams that somehow get points off Inter that will qualify from this group. So I think those are the most important games.
Okay, so the Inter doubleheader for you. Lee, which one are you targeting as the crunch game?
I would agree with that. I think it's the Inter doubleheader, particularly because of where it comes in the group stage. You know, two games in a row, match day three and match day four. I think that could, shape the group to quite a significant degree. So I would say those games. And also I think that, you know, if you look at Benfica last season in Europe, they came through the group stage unbeaten, 1-4, drew 2. They finished 11 points ahead of Juventus in that group. They're a really good team and they've strengthened over the summer with the likes of Angel Di Maria coming in. So I think that probably Benfica are the favourites to win the group. But then if Salzburg can get points off of Inter in that double header, then that could give them a really good chance.
Interesting. I will go for the Sociedad home game on the 3rd of October. That's match day 2. I think if Salzburg can get some points in the account by match day 2, they can really build themselves a little platform from which to qualify. So I'll go with that one. But I like that you've picked out the Inter double header as well. And the game then that you're most looking forward to, would it be one of those, or is there a special tie in there for you, Simon, something that you think as a fan I would love to get along to that one?
Well, I mean, as a fan, I think Inter Milan at home is definitely the most attractive. A little story is I used to be an Inter fan when I was a child. I used to watch Football Italia on Channel 4 and Inter were my favorite team, so actually there's some self-interest there as well.
So you want to go and see Inter. I mean, the San Siro is one of my favourite places literally in the world to see football. So I'm excited at potentially having another chance to get back to San Siro. Lee, anything different from you?
I did see a Champions League game a couple of years back at the Estadio da Luz in Lisbon and accidentally bumped into Robert Lewandowski on an escalator at Lisbon Airport the next day. That was quite a cool memory. And the stadium itself, there's an incredible atmosphere. You've got the eagle flying around before kickoff, Benfica's eagle, the mascot. I think that would be a really nice outing for any Salzburg fans or neutrals that want to do a cool away day in the Champions League. So I'll say Lisbon.
Yeah, fair enough. I'd love to go to that one as well. Thanks very much for your contributions to this podcast. It's been nice to look ahead to Champions League Group D with Salzburg very much in amongst it. We'll keep our fingers crossed from the Austrian perspective that Salzburg can make inroads into Europe once again and go long and go past Christmas, perhaps, in Europe. We'll hope for that and we'll look forward to these group games. We hope that this podcast can be useful throughout the group stages and that you'll enjoy it. We've got other podcasts covering LASK and Sturm in their respective European groups as well, so do listen out for those alongside our regular Bundesliga content. Thanks for listening to the other Bundesliga podcast. Goodbye.